Oh yay, oh yay, oh yay.
All persons having business before the Honorable, the United States Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit, are admonished to draw near and to give their attention, for the court is now sitting. God save the United States and its Honorable Court. Be seated, please. Case number 08-5078, Roger C. S. Lynn et al. Appellant versus United States of America. Mr. Camp for the appellant, Ms. Patterson for the appellee.
Mr. Camp, good morning.
Good morning. May it please the court, I am Charles Camp on behalf of plaintiffs' appellants. This is a treaty interpretation case. We're asking the district court to interpret the San Francisco Peace Treaty and determine whether the plaintiffs have any rights under the U.S. Constitution.
Well, that's one of the issues before us, isn't it? Whether it's a treaty interpretation case or some other case, doesn't your claim turn on whether the United States exercises some form of sovereignty over Taiwan? Isn't that the gravamen of your argument?
The court would have to examine sovereignty, but not determine sovereignty. For example, in the Bedouin case, the Supreme Court looked at the fact. That Cuba exercises.
The Boumediene case? I'm sorry.
Yes, I'm sorry.
Okay. Yeah.
Yes, the Supreme Court looked at the fact that Cuba has ultimate sovereignty. That was their words over Guantanamo Bay, but the U.S. exercises complete control. And so they examined sovereignty to determine what constitutional rights. The people at Guantanamo Bay have.
Your claim is that the United States exercises sovereignty over Taiwan.
Under the San Francisco Peace Treaty, it says that the United States is the principal occupying force over Taiwan. And so the question then is, what rights, if any, do my clients have?
And they have no rights unless the United States exercises sovereignty over Taiwan, right?
They have to look at sovereignty, but they don't determine sovereignty. You know,
do your clients have any rights if the United States has no sovereignty over Taiwan?
If the U.S. is not the principal occupier.
No, I'm using the word sovereignty. That's the word. Answer my question.
Sovereignty.
If the United States exercises no sovereignty over Taiwan, do your clients have any claims, any rights?
If they control it? For example, in Cuba, in Guantanamo Bay, the U.S. controls Guantanamo Bay. I don't know if that means they have sovereignty or not, but they control it. And they have, in essence, I would consider it to be de facto sovereignty because of their control. And the control...
So does the United States control Taiwan?
They don't control it. Our position is they have sovereignty de jure. As a matter of law under the San Francisco Peace Treaty because they are the principal occupier.
Which branch of government does the Constitution give the power to determine who's sovereign over
land? There's no determination of sovereignty that's necessary. It's the fact...
You just said they have sovereignty de jure.
Yes, and that's...
Which branch of government decides who has sovereignty de jure over land?
The U.S.'s relationship with Taiwan is set forth in the treaty. That's been decided as a political matter.
That's not my question.
I'm
asking you about a more general principle, the principles of law by which we have to decide this case. Which branch of government determines who has sovereignty de jure over a piece of land?
Well, it is for the political branches to determine who has sovereignty, but we're not asking for a determination of sovereignty.
I want to stay away. I'm asking questions about principles. We'll get to your case.
Okay.
But it is for the political branches to decide who has sovereignty de jure over a piece of land, right?
Well, it's already been determined under the treaty is our position.
Yeah, I understand that's your position, but it's for the political branches to make the determination who has sovereignty de jure, right? And you say that the treaties here have made it.
It's already been decided. Yes, correct. And so, therefore, the question is, as a matter, it is for the courts to decide Well, because the U.S. is the principal occupying force over Taiwan, it is therefore for the courts to determine what rights do people living there have under the Constitution. Courts decide what the laws are. Courts decide.
In the red brief at page 3, the government says, in 1954, the United States and the Republic of China signed a mutual defense treaty wherein the United States recognized the Republic of China as the government of China and recognized Taiwan to be among its territories. Is that accurate or not?
No, that's not accurate.
It's not. What's wrong with that?
That was for a very limited purpose there. The legislative history for the mutual defense treaty, which is cited in my reply brief, makes clear that the mutual defense treaty made no change whatsoever in who has sovereignty over Taiwan. The Republic of China oversees Taiwan.
But the United States recognized the Republic of China as a government, right?
Well, the Republic of China oversees it administratively. That's what the legislative history makes clear, is that it is an administrative overseeing of Taiwan that the Republic of China does.
Does the Republic of China issue passports to its citizens?
It issues passports, but those are not recognized by a lot of places because a lot of places don't.
The Republic of China itself issues passports for its citizens.
That's my understanding.
Okay. Is there any passport that's issued by the Taiwanese government? I know this case involves the plaintiffs seeking U.S. passports.
Yes, they would like non-U.S. citizen passports.
What type of identification or what do they travel on now?
They get a travel document, but it's not recognized by countries that don't recognize Taiwan. It's a discretionary matter. That is a problem that the people from Taiwan have, is they can't go to countries that don't recognize their travel documents. It's like showing up with a passport issued by Maryland. They just go, well, what's this? This is not a country.
Does the Taiwanese government issue these travel documents?
Yes.
Okay.
Assuming that you're right, you agree that the political branches decide this question of sovereignty, and you think that we did that in the Treaty of San Francisco.
Yes.
But there have been other actions by the political branches, namely the executive, which have articulated this idea of strategic ambiguity. Can the court simply ignore those later actions?
None of those later actions changed the treaty, and there have been no later treaties to amend. It was left as who owns Taiwan was left purposefully as an open question when they signed the San Francisco Peace Treaty. Included in the appendix are documents pertaining to the negotiation of the San Francisco Peace Treaty, and it's very clear that it was left open because they wanted the option to decide what happened to Taiwan at a later time. There was no agreement that could be reached among the Allied forces in Japan as to who gets Taiwan, and that question is still open. And the executive cannot issue something that modifies a treaty. The treaty is the supreme law of the land.
In your answer, haven't you just acknowledged what the government's position here is? Is that whoever has sovereignty over Taiwan, it isn't the United States. That it's an open issue, and that's been the foreign policy of the executive for 50 years or so.
No, but as a matter of law, we are the principal occupying force, and that is the status as a matter of law today. And from that, rights flow. And that is for the courts to decide what rights flow from that status, the status of the U.S. being the principal occupying force.
Can you cite me any examples in history where the United States has been the principal occupying force of a territory and the residents of that territory were entitled to passports from the United States or other rights?
The Philippines is one example. In fact, there was a point in time when we were the principal occupying force over the Philippines. It was after following World War II, the same situation. The people in the Philippines had rights to U.S. passports that had been recognized. So they had passports, and then there was a time when we were turning over the sovereignty of the Philippines to its own people, to its own government. And there was a delay before the new government would issue passports. And so during that gap, when we were there and the government became effective, you couldn't get passports. And somebody there went all the way to the Supreme Court and said it's cruel and unusual punishment for people not to be able to get a passport. And the Supreme Court agreed that the people in limbo had no rights to passports. And they said...
But that's never been done for people in Taiwan.
No, this issue has not come up on
has
Taiwan.
Has it ever been attempted by anyone in Taiwan before now?
Okay. No.
Let me ask you about the claim that your clients are non-citizen nationals. Does that depend on this determination of sovereignty, or is that a separate basis on which you're arguing?
Whether they are nationals, first of all, is a question for courts to decide. Immigration statute makes it clear that decisions on nationality are for the courts to decide. And the courts will decide on the basis of the relationship of the territory where the people live to the United States. You examine the relationship, just like in the Guantanamo Bay case, they examined the relationship between the U.S.'s control of Guantanamo Bay and here. And then they examined the relationship and then decided what the rights were. It's the same thing. You examine the relationship that exists, that has existed for years between the U.S. and Taiwan, and then you decide from there what flows from that, what rights flow from that, and non-citizen nationality is one of the things that we are seeking.
I guess my specific question is, are you focusing on this idea of permanent allegiance to the United States, which courts have generally rejected, or are you making a different argument?
Yes, it is for courts to decide, just one point, it is for courts to decide whether there's this permanent allegiance. That's a judicial decision and not an executive or political decision. You have to look, it's just what is the legal relationship? What is the relationship between the U.S. and Taiwan? And that is set forth in the San Francisco Peace Treaty. And then from that, you decide what rights they have. Are they nationals or not? But that's a substantive issue that, we basically want our day in court on. This was not a political question. We don't believe this is a political question case, and we want our day in court. That's obviously why we're appealing. We don't think the political question doctrine applies. There's not a single case that the government cites that says that the political question doctrine has ever prohibited a court from interpreting a treaty or determining the existence of constitutional rights. In fact, the government's own brief says that all the cases we've cited in our briefs, in the appellant's briefs, are inapposite, it says, because all the cases involve judicial interpretation of statutes or treaties. Well, that's precisely correct. All of our cases do involve the interpretation of a statute or a treaty and the determination of the constitutional rights.
You are not arguing that Bomadine actually... does away with the political question doctrine. You are just arguing that it doesn't apply in this circumstance.
I'm arguing that in that case, the courts looked at the relationship between the U.S. and Guantanamo Bay. They examined the sovereignty, basically, the control. What was the situation? In Downs versus Bidwell in 1901, the Supreme Court said that... the determination of what particular provision of the Constitution is applicable in all cases involves an inquiry into the situation of the territory and its relationship to the United States. And that was a case relied on in the Guantanamo Bay case, in the Bedouin case. You can examine
the
situation.
That we are reluctant followers of Bomadine, so we don't get a whole lot of warm fuzzies. But we are followers of Bomadine.
Yes, so I'm not asking, there's no determination of sovereignty we're asking for. We're only asking that you examine the situation as was done in the Bedouin case and as was done in 1901.
If we were to find that later executive action somehow altered the San Francisco peace treaty. Your case really turns on the San Francisco peace treaty being governing law today, right?
If the San Francisco peace treaty doesn't exist in its current form, then we're done. But the treaties are supreme law of the land and can't be changed except by another treaty. Or we can withdraw.
Wouldn't you acknowledge that the executive has taken, since the treaty, positions that are contrary to yours?
No.
The executive has taken the position that that the United States does not exercise sovereignty or control over Taiwan.
It hasn't actually done that. It has basically said we are not changing.
I'm surprised to the State Department to hear they haven't done that.
No, they have never said we are no longer the principal occupying force of Taiwan. I mean, they have never been, if they have specifically intended to say we are no longer the principal occupying force of Taiwan, they have never used those words. There's never any document that they have ever, that the executive or the legislative branch has ever said, we are no longer the principal occupying force of Taiwan. And there have been no decisions by the executive branch or Congress that people in Taiwan are not nationals. This is just an area that hasn't been decided.
Let me ask you about the Treaty of Taipei, which was between China and the Republic of China and Japan. And at least in that treaty, the Republic of China said in Article 10 that the inhabitants and former inhabitants of Taiwan and the pescadores are nationals of the Republic of China. Now, what do we do about that treaty if we say, well, there are U.S. nationals as well? Or what weight do we give that treaty? Where the Republic of China has, and probably in other places too, I don't know, but declared the people of Taiwan to be nationals of the Republic of China.
Well, I'll admit, I have not ever read those words in that treaty that indicate that the people of Taiwan are nationals, that it's agreed that they are nationals of the Republic of China.
What it says in Article 10 is nationals of the Republic of China shall be deemed to include all the inhabitants and former inhabitants of Taiwan, Formosa, and Penghu, the pescadores, and their descendants.
That doesn't change our treaty that says that we are the principal occupying force of Taiwan.
Well, it may not change the treaty, but
I think it would be. I think that would be a political decision to decide. What effect does that treaty have on our government? But I guess courts certainly are charged with interpreting treaties, so that you could argue that either way. But I'm unaware.
Let me ask you, if as I understand your argument, it's you're relying on the phrase in the treaty, principal occupying power, right? The United States is principal occupying power. And you're saying that from that language flows rights to citizens of Taiwan. What are the limits of those rights? Do they receive all the constitutional rights of a citizen of the United States?
Well, there are the insular cases. Back from the turn of the century, 1900, dealt with the issue of what rights apply. In fact, in that case, I've got it right here, the question was, in Downs v. Bidwell, again, it says, the determination of what particular provision of the Constitution is applicable involves an inquiry. Okay. The real issue in the insular cases was not whether the Constitution extended to the Philippines or Puerto Rico. You had asked for other examples. Philippines, when we went there, but which of its provisions were applicable?
Well, right now you're asking for passport rights, right? But under the force of your reasoning, do habeas corpus extend there? I mean, you've been talking about the Boumediene case.
The cases say fundamental personal rights declared in the Constitution. That's what the cases support. That's Torres versus Puerto Rico.
And that's what the case supports.
It's fundamental personal rights.
What are some of the fundamental rights, American constitutional rights, that citizens of Taiwan are entitled to under your reasoning? You're saying get a passport. That's one of them.
Sure. Well, it's in the declarations that I sought, which are in the complaint. The first two declarations have to do with declaring that they are non-citizen nationals. The other ones are that they have the Fifth Amendment right against life, liberty, and property without due process of law. The 14th Amendment, same thing. Fifth Amendment, right to travel without due process of law, which requires notice and a hearing. In other words, have right to a passport. The Supreme Court held that it's cruel and unusual punishment to not allow somebody to have a passport.
Your argument is ever since the San Francisco Peace Treaty, citizens of Taiwan have been entitled to these U.S.
Fundamental personal rights under the Constitution, correct, as well as the 8th, 14th, and the First Amendment right to petition the government for redress. So, but those are substantive questions.
So for citizens of Taiwan who have complaint under the First Amendment, who would they bring that against? Would they bring that against the Republic of China? Would they bring that against the United States?
The United States. If they have fundamental rights...
So all the government actors in Taiwan right now are agents of the United States?
The Republic of China is holding Taiwan basically in trust.
Miranda rights? So I'm a citizen of Taiwan and I'm arrested, and the arresting authority doesn't read me my Miranda rights. I have come to federal district court here.
We haven't asked for that. It's just fundamental rights, and what that means is
trial.
We're not asking for that. I mean, that's a substantive question in terms of precisely what rights.
You're asking for something that's quite breathtaking.
Well, it might be, but that's what the law supports, and that's what the facts support. And courts are the ones charged with determining what constitutional rights exist. And we'd like our day in court to have the court determine what constitutional rights exist.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Ms. Patterson?
May it please the court, Melissa Patterson on behalf of the United States. Your Honors, we ask this court to affirm the district court's dismissal of the action here, either on the grounds that in order to resolve the United States de jure sovereignty over Taiwan would involve a political question, or if this court construes the complaint here to only assert that plaintiffs are nationals under the United States under the Immigration and Nationality Act, I think that could be disposed of simply on the merits, on the statutory grounds that to be a national is defined within that act as persons born in the outlying possessions of the United States, which are limited to American Samoa and Swains Island.
What is the government's position about the status of the San Francisco Peace Treaty, particularly the language that the United States is the principal occupying power? Is that good law?
I believe the treaty is in effect. We have not taken a position on whether or not the United States is in fact the principal occupying, the United States is not, let me be clear, the United States is not the principal occupying power under Taiwan.
What has changed? Because that's the language of the treaty, right?
Yes, but I think there have been several pertinent changes if this court is looking at de jure sovereignty. First of all, there was the 1954 Mutual Defense Treaty, in which the United States recognized Taiwan to be among the Republic of China's territories. In 1972, we began talks with the People's Republic of China. In 1978, President Carter announced that as of January 1st, 1979, we would be discontinuing diplomatic relations with the Republic of China and opening up relations with the People's Republic of China.
But how is that inconsistent with the language of principal occupying power? Perhaps the 1954 Mutual Defense Treaty is recognizing a government on the Republic of China.
Certainly, Your Honor.
But are there any other examples? Or is that sufficient?
I think that's sufficient, Your Honor. Again, we haven't offered up an interpretation of the San Francisco Peace Treaty because we don't think it's relevant here. What plaintiffs are arguing is that the San Francisco Peace Treaty makes the United States the principal occupying power, and then they take an inferential leap to say that means that the United States is the de jure sovereign, and then there's another leap to de jure sovereignty means that they are
what
nationals.
What does that language mean, though? I mean, it means something.
The principal occupying power?
Yeah.
I believe that refers to the fact that at the time the United States signed that treaty, it was the principal occupying power of Japan. I'm a little hesitant to offer the United States' definitive construction of that treaty because, again, we just don't think it's relevant here. Plaintiffs are claiming that they have rights that stem not simply under that treaty, but from the fact that that treaty makes the United States the de jure sovereign over Taiwan. And the United States has made it very, very clear that whoever the de jure sovereign of Taiwan is, it is not the United States. Moreover, all of plaintiffs' claims are based on...
Can the United States, if in fact the treaty, the language of the treaty creates the United States as the de jure sovereign, can the United States walk away from that treaty obligation?
Certainly, Your Honor, I think that any questions about who the de jure sovereign is over a territory are entirely within the province of the political branches.
If a treaty has established that the United States is the de jure sovereign,
I believe
can
that
the executive unilaterally change that?
I'm a little shaky in my recollection of Goldwater v. Carter, but I believe that the president
can. The answer is no.
Okay. So I don't believe there's anything in that treaty that would establish the United States as the de jure sovereign. And I think that the extent to which you need to look at that treaty here is somewhat informed by this court's statements about how you go about examining a political question. And this court in the Bankul decision clearly, and quoting Baker, said you need to...
What's different here is if the language of the treaty supports what counsel said. If in fact the language principal occupying power means that the United States is the de jure sovereign, you're in trouble.
Let me offer up the United States position that is not what that treaty means. Whatever else it may mean, it does not mean that the United States is the de jure sovereign over Taiwan. And I think in resolving this question, this court should look to perform that discriminating analysis of the particular question posed here. And the particular question posed here is not whether or not the United States is the principal occupying power, but whether or not plaintiffs are nationals of the United States, and further, whether or not the United States is the de jure sovereign over Taiwan. And on both of those questions, plaintiffs' claims fail.
If the United States is the de jure sovereign over Taiwan, would they be nationals?
Not necessarily,
okay.
Your Honor.
So it's possible that those questions are actually separate.
Yes, Your Honor. And as we...
Why is that?
Because national is a statutory term defined in the Immigration and Nationality Act.
America, Samoa, and Swains Island. That's
exactly, Your Honor. And I suppose that plaintiffs are alleging that there is some non-statutory route to national status, and I think that there's a pretty solid wall of precedent, all eight circuit courts to have examined whether or not you can become a national within the meaning of the Immigration Act by any non-statutory routes, they've clearly said you cannot.
What right?
Was that still true after Boumediene? I think what Mr. Camp is arguing is that if de facto sovereignty is enough, then if they have a claim of de jure sovereignty, they're actually in a stronger position.
I think that's simply not true, Your Honor. All of the cases, Boumediene and the Insular cases, the Supreme Court made it clear that what they were examining there was the United States' objective degree of control or perhaps de facto sovereignty. And the Boumediene decision explicitly noted the same language that the district court here noted from Vermilia Brown. They declined to question the government's assertion that the United States was not the de jure sovereign over Guantanamo Bay, just as this court should decline to question the executive's assertion that the United States is not the de jure sovereign over Taiwan. So, and all of the plaintiff's claims here rest on an assertion of de jure sovereignty. They are not asserting, nor could they assert, that the United States exercises any actual control over Taiwan.
Doesn't that lead us to a sort of odd result, that de facto sovereignty is more powerful than de jure sovereignty, if that's what exists here?
That may be odd, but that's what the Supreme Court said. And actually, I think there's a good reason for that, Your Honor. In the Insular cases, or at least in the Boumediene decision discussing the Insular cases, the court said the issue there wasn't necessarily about the, you know, de jure reach of the Constitution over a particular territory. It was what limitations in here in the United States' actual exercise of power over people, so that the constitutional limitations follow an actual exercise of power as opposed to a paper trail.
What rights would come to someone who couldn't meet the statutory requirement for being a national, but live in a territory over which the United States exercises de jure sovereignty?
I don't know that question's ever been presented, because I don't think it's ever been explored if the United States holds simply de jure sovereignty but doesn't exercise any actual control. I don't know what rights would compare there.
What about then de facto sovereignty? I'm just wondering, other than the statutory right to claim national, which you say precludes, are there any other rights that they would have, that someone would have?
If the United States were exercising, I think your question is de facto.
Yeah,
I think the Insular cases did discuss what various rights would attend the United States' exercise of actual power, of their objective degree of control. And the court noted there that it's a highly case-specific type of analysis that depends on the United States' particular relationship. And I think in some of those Insular cases, the court indicated that the stronger the ties, the more the control the United States had over the area, that could change the shape of the constitutional limitations that went with the exercise of that power. So I can't offer you up a general laundry list of rights that might go along with an exercise of de facto power.
So they don't include the right to a passport?
I don't think they would include the right to the passport, certainly, Your Honor. If there are no further questions from the court, the government will rest.
Actually, I do have
yes.
This is a minor point. In your red brief at 18, you quote our decision in Boumediene that, quote, the determination of sovereignty over an area is for the legislative and executive departments. Do you agree with that? Is that a legislative function, recognition of determination of sovereignty over an area? I would have thought that the government's position would be that's exclusively for the executive. I mean, the Constitution gives to the executive the right to recognize ambassadors and ministers.
Well, certainly Article 2 is rich with delegations to the executive branch. To the extent that the legislative powers hold a role here, I think that they've clearly spoken in this case. I don't know if every case would involve a legislative weighing in on their particular sovereignty.
Why don't you take 2 minutes to respond to anything the government has said?
Yeah, just very, very, very briefly. I just wanted to point out that in the Bedouin case, it says it is not altogether uncommon for a territory to be under the de jure sovereignty of one nation while the plenary control or practical sovereignty of another. This condition can occur when the territory is seized during war, as Guantanamo was during the Spanish-American War. And so, we conquered Japan. Japan gave up all right, title, and claim in territories, including Taiwan. We are the principal occupying force, therefore. So the Bedouin case does deal with the importance of de jure sovereignty and points out, of course, that the Insular cases are still effective today, obviously. It says this century-old doctrine informs our analysis in the present matter, that being when we have sovereignty over a territory, there are guarantees of certain fundamental personal rights declared in the Constitution. The counsel for the government pointed out there's this discriminating analysis of the 6 Baker factors that has to be done, and the district court didn't do that. She just sort of,
She didn't identify 2 Baker factors, and you only need 1.
Well, but I don't think she understood, and I don't think she clearly didn't understand that we were not seeking a declaration of sovereignty. We were seeking a declaration of rights under the Constitution following an interpretation of the treaty by the court. So the court just sort of stepped off on the wrong foot, and then if you assume that we were seeking to have a court decide who owns Taiwan, then the political question cases would apply and she would be right and the government would be right. But that's not what we're seeking. We're not asking the court to decide who owns Taiwan. We're asking the court to determine, based on the language of the treaty, what are the rights, the fundamental constitutional rights.
Because your argument is that the treaty makes clear that the United States is the
principal occupying force.
And that with that comes the power to, the right to have a passport.
Correct. And just one
other indicia of citizenship, right? Protection of the U.S. Constitution.
Yeah, certain fundamental rights to be determined. And I just wanted to point out, if I may, just one more minute or less, whether my clients owe permanent allegiance to the U.S. for purposes of determining whether or not they qualify as nationals is a question to be decided by federal courts. Congress, in the Immigration Act, has not provided any explicit guidance as to the circumstances under which a person owes permanent allegiance to the U.S. This is from a Fourth Circuit case, 2006, Dragiance versus Gonzalez, and there are other similar cases. It is for the courts to decide nationality and for the courts to determine permanent allegiance, and there's nothing there that says that you have to go through the statute. I think it's an open question.
All right.
Thank you very much.